from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. In our ongoing first-person series, we'll meet Tommy Guerrero in the hour ahead, San Francisco-born and raised skateboard legend of yesteryear who now lives in the East Bay and has established himself, as you can hear from the samplings, as a composer, guitarist, and bassist. He recently released a new album, Lifeboats and Follies, and he'll join us for the hour talking about skateboarding and his distinct signature music, among other things. Forum is next. Join us for the hour after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. What you're listening to is a track called Organism from Tommy Guerrero's album Soul Food Taqueria, and he's here with us in studio. San Francisco-born and raised skateboarding legend and musician Tommy Guerrero, who began skating, actually, in the Inner Sunset neighborhood around 9 years of age and playing music a couple years later at the age of 12. He left school in the 10th grade, became a professional skateboarder, part of the Bones Brigade skaters in the 1980s, and toured the world. And from teen skate icon and entrepreneur, he established himself in the world of independent music with music which the San Francisco Chronicle once described as, quote, a soul jazz fusion that feels like a soundtrack for walking the streets of San Francisco. Tommy Guerrero recently released his newest album, Lifeboats and Follies, and as part of our ongoing first-person series featuring leaders, innovators, and others who make the Bay Area unique, he joins us for this hour. Good to have you here. Welcome.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, delighted to do that. You signed on kind of a professional contract when you were only in 10th grade and found your way out of the high school you were in, huh?
Yeah, I did. It wasn't quite that easy. It started around 84 when Stacy Peralta seen me at a skate contest in San Francisco. I'd already been sponsored by different companies at that point. But Stacy Peralta had a company called Powell Peralta, which was we called the Dream Team. And he had seen me skate at a contest, and he spoke with my brother and said that he was interested in me riding for Powell. And, you know, my brother, big brother, right? You know, they always mess with you in various ways. Told me this, and I didn't believe him because I thought there's no way. And it was true. Stacy contacted me, spoke with my mom about it, and it went from there.
Dropping out of high school, was that a difficult thing to do?
I do not condone it.
Well, you got a son
It was extremely difficult because I had to speak with my mom about it because my mom, worked 24/7. And me and my brother were raised by her, and we were basically, you know, latchkey kids. At very young age, we were very independent. And so there was a time when I went to high school, you know, it was very segregated. It was still very cliquey. And being a 14-year-old kid who looked like he was about 11 with spiked bleached hair, spiked wristbands, and a skateboard, you know, I didn't fit in anywhere. So I got a lot of grief from all of the different factions. And I even got grief from the teachers.
You had a 7-year-old son. Now, you obviously would not like to see him drop out of high school, if there were a career to go around the world.
Of course not. But my mom, after speaking with my mom about it, and she didn't know what to do because what could you really do? She worked, every day, and how could she enforce, it? There's just no way. So.
Plus, it was more income, and you were a star, and all that.
Well, you know, that happened a little later. Somehow, she trusted me and sort of, just knew that I wouldn't end up on the wrong side of things, I believe.
Did your mom used to see what you could do? Because I know you were skating all around the hills around 9th Avenue where you live, but also going up to Parnassus and going down that big hill there.
Yeah, no, she came to a couple contests when they had them in the city, and she can't watch. She gets
– I wouldn't think
It was very difficult for her. Yeah, she couldn't. She said it would make her sick to her stomach.
But you were so involved in skateboarding that, I mean, this is hard to believe. One of the things that kids want more than anything else when they turn 16 is a driver's license. You didn't get a license, I understand, until you were 25.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
you could go almost as fast as some of the cars.
This is true. You know, the city's so small, and we would skate from literally from Ocean Beach to Embarcadero daily. So there was no need for it. You know, and plus the hills were – that was our skate park.
Sense was of total freedom, I guess, when you were skating in those
yes.
days, huh?
Yeah, completely. And I think that's, of course, what also, you know, the gravity was total – you know, it's really about being alone, you know, and really about solitude and not having to depend on others and not having to deal with other people. And it becomes, you know, your friend, really. It's kind of hard to explain.
Well, you know, I watched you on YouTube. We're talking about the golden era skateboarding between the 80s and the 90s, golden age, really, for skateboarders. And just the stuff that you do. I mean, going up steps and turning around on steps and, you know, going sort of flying in the air and turning somersaults and stuff. I mean,
well, you should see what
like
they
an
do
acrobat,
now.
Really. Yeah, no, I know. But, I mean, just even seeing it then and bringing it back, I mean, you got into – like you became a consultant on a movie with Christian Slater. You and Tony Hawk, is that right?
Yeah. Well, we were in the movie is Gleaming the Cube, and me and Tony were hired to teach Christian how to skate. And we all had bit parts in the movie as well, several of which mine were cut out, thankfully. And we would meet Christian at a schoolyard, and he would just tell us to go skate because he was kind of embarrassed. So we would just go skate all day, and they would pay us to go skate around, basically. It was pretty ridiculous, actually.
Then got to be in a float in New Orleans, got to sit down and have a beer with George Harrison. I mean, this was a high time of really fascinating stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we were extremely fortunate. Skateboarding was so pervasive and at that time that we ended up doing things that most people dream of. And it was just because of skateboarding. I mean, being in movies and you know, going to the pre-Mardi Gras stuff. And we were on the float, you know, the head float, throwing out beads and all of that. And you know what goes along with that. So that was really interesting. And meeting, you know, George Harrison and having dinner at his castle with him.
Oh, it was dinner. I thought it was just a beer.
Oh, no. We what happened was his son skated. And he was at a demo in London, and he came and he asked us, hey, do you guys want to come over for dinner? And they sent a car over, and we went to his castle, and they showed us all around. We seen all the, you know, platinum records in his studio and everything. But he was a bit, I would say, you know, he was a bit blue, to say the least. It was a couple days after Roy Orbison had passed. And so he was really over all the everything. And so anyway, me and him just sat on the lawn while everyone kind of walked around and drank beer and talked. But I was never a Beatles fan because I was coming from the punk rock world. So I was seeing him as, you know, never trust a hippie, you know, that attitude. So, of course, it didn't have any real effect on me too much later in life.
We're talking to Tommy Guerrero, who was a legendary figure in the world of skateboarding. And I'm sure some of you who remember that world may want to join us in the course of this hour. But then there was the transition into the world of punk music. And from a beer and dinner with Harrison, it was to free beer.
Well, yeah, that was post free beer. But yeah.
But let's talk about the story when you were smuggled into the Mahue Gardens. I mean, in a drum case.
It's funny because we were playing clubs that, you know, none of us should even been in. None of us were even 21, and we used to play the Mab, Fab Mab, as they called it, the Mabuhay Gardens up on Broadway, and the On Broadway, which was next door. And there was a time when, you know, everyone was concerned that I wasn't going to get in, so. You know, I was very small at a later age, and of course I still am, but they stuffed me in a drum case. I believe it was like the kick drum case and brought me in through the back. You know, there's an alleyway where you get entrance to the stage. And next thing you know, I'm on stage playing bass, and probably Dirk Dirksen's looking around going, what is going on? How do you get in here? You know, pretty funny.
You want to tell the Henry Rollins story about Black Bag?
Sure. Well, we were friends, me and my brother, and we're friends with one of the roadies. They called him Mugger. And when they would come to town, we'd hang out. And there was a time when in my mom's basement on 7th Avenue, we had all our instruments set up. So they came over. Chuck Dukowski, the bass player, and Rollins came over. And this is when he first started singing with Black Flag. And we didn't really know him from Black Flag at that time. We knew him from his older band. So they came over and we ended up just jamming. But Rollins ended up sitting with my mom in the living room watching TV. And they're there a couple hours. So after my mom, you know, they split. My mom comes out. Oh, he was really nice. You know, he's a nice guy. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And that night we went to go see him. And I don't know if you know Henry Rollins, and that he just becomes an animal on stage. He's actually kind of frightening. He just turned it on, and we were blown away. You know, thinking my mom was just saying this guy was so nice, and now he, he becomes somebody else. You know. It's a funny story.
It's called performance,
it,
I think.
It definitely, but I think it also, it's one of those things, like with music, it's so emotional, you know, and so intense that it brings it out in you.
We've actually got the premiere cut of that, which I'd like to. You know, the novel Visit from the Goon Squad that was just published, just won the National Book Circle's Critic Award. Jennifer Egan, who was a San Francisco born and raised author, now living in New York, but it's all about that scene and it all takes place here and everything. It'd be fun for you to read. Want to hear this cut? Let's hear it.
So much I did, Bertrand found too bad. So much I did, now you're thinking I don't die. Death. No, I don't know why. Mother Nature's making you cry. Heard the water knocking at the door. Saw Dad wash down the hall. How come I got a little water when all she's doing was clean out the gutter?
Seconds can marry.
Everything was so grim.
Seconds can marry.
You want to survive, gonna have to swim.
It's one of Tommy Guerrero's 80s skate punk bands. It was called Free Beer, and that's the track called Start the Ark. I guess that's for Noah, huh?
Yeah, basically.
And we're talking to Tommy Guerrero as part of our first person series. We're going to probably hear, I hope, from some of you who remember that period and have some memories perhaps of Tommy Guerrero during that period. There's a musician lineage in your family. I mean, your mother, you give full credit for really being the one who raised you, and your brother as a single mother, and obviously have a lot of respect and for her going to work so hard.
Completely.
And all that. But I know you hardly knew your father, but what, he played with George Benson?
Yeah, it turned out that there was four boys. He had, you know, obviously there was my three uncles and him, and they started out in doo-wop bands, and then they started playing instruments, and they formed bands together. But my father ended up playing lots of different instruments, and he was part of the Fillmore scene that was going on here in the city. He would always go up to these clubs and just sit in, you know, and I'd seen him recently, and, you know, we talked, and he had sat in with, he said, Jimmy Smith and George Benson and all these heavyweight jazz cats and on different instruments on different occasions. And his father, my grandfather, was a jazz guitarist and violinist.
He was with the Royal Filipino Orchestra.
Yeah,
I saw some
pictures
of them.
Yeah, from the mid-40s, none of that ever surfaced till really after my grandmother passed away about 10 years back. So all these photos started surfacing, and it's quite amazing to see. It kind of blows me away. So, you know, it leads me to believe that it's definitely genetics. I mean, my brother's a great guitar player, and he plays everything as well. And you can't escape your genes, I think.
Your mother have musical talent?
No, she can. Nah, I don't even think she can snap in time.
Well,
sorry, Mom.
Talk about your music, because it's been described in so many ways. But I think the important thing is the urban environment where you skated was a lot of the inspiration.
Yeah, completely. What really happened was after the skate parks closed in the South Bay, what we were going to, you know, we'd take BART to bus to another bus. It would take us all day to get there. But that's where all the skateboard parks were. When they all closed down, we just went right back to skating the streets. And this is when street skating just started to take off. And that was a large part of it and why street skating came to be, because it's so accessible. You walk out of your front door, and especially somewhere like San Francisco, it's a playground, you know, and the way that, you know, some of these objects can be utilized and transcended is just amazing. So the way you see a curb or a block or a step or a bush is unlike anyone else. You do not see it in the same way. You do not perceive it being, you know, being used as its intent, like a rail. You know, now it's like, oh, you hold to walk up the stairs. Well, obviously people like to go down the rail and, you know, skate them and stuff.
It's a different world to a skateboarder.
Completely. And you never lose that eye. Like, I've never lost that eye, and it's it stays with you forever. You just
Does it help you in some ways? I mean, does it give
completely.
You how does it make you more
it just
against the world?
I think
so
it just makes you approach life in a not so typical manner. You know, you don't see the same barriers. You don't see the same things that tend to
maybe you see more. In fact, really, one could argue.
No, I don't think so, because I think that after being a skateboarder and sitting and trying a trick 100 times or all day long until you finally land it, it really teaches you a sense of extremely being tenacious and being one to persevere, because you're going to sit there till you make it. And it's the same thing in life. When you approach life later, that you think that no matter what it is, you can, just like you said, you do something long enough, you could be decent at it. And if someone throws you a curveball and say, hey, well, now you have to do this in life, you look at it and go, okay, I threw myself into the concrete for 30 years. I bet you I could, you know, push a pencil or count some beans or whatever, you know, whatever necessary at that point in life.
Talking to skateboarder and musician, composer, and philosopher, obviously, Tommy Guerrero.
Philosopher.
By the way, you'll find Tommy Guerrero's website as well as an early skate video and a video from his latest album on our website, kqed.org/forum. And I want to hear a track from your latest album. Before we do that, though, I just wanted to have you define your music a little bit, because it's mainly instrumental music.
Yeah.
And you've said on a number of occasions that Americans aren't that attuned, I'm sorry to use that word,
sure,
to instrumental music. I mean, they're used to lyrics, really.
Yeah, I think that, you know, maybe if I was doing this, say, 50 years ago or more, you know, when jazz was something that was still really relevant, that people would get it. But I think that now, you know, music's changed drastically, and I'm not, you know, music is great. If people do what you do what you believe in. But what I do comes from my gut, comes from my being. And words can sometimes get in the way, and that's the problem, because language fails us constantly, right? So what's great is all over the world, people dig my music. You know, I've got a request to come to Brazil. I'm going to Paris this summer. I got, you know, I was going to go to Japan, and which I usually do every year.
Started going to Japan as a skateboarder, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And it just kind of kept going from there. But so I think that they you don't have to worry about language in that sense, and it can be much more receptive.
Well, it's mood music. It's often been described as groove music, but you say, it's just rock and roll.
Sure, at some point.
But you've done stuff for Queer as Folks. I mean, your music has been on that, and Sex and the City, and CSI Miami. It certainly is not only all over the world, but all over.
Yeah, I mean, there's been tons of licensing, which has been great, because as we all know, in this day and age, when, you know, with the advent of all the digital media, you can get music anywhere at any time for free. That the licensing thing is, you know, really helps basically just pay the bills and perpetuate your craft, because otherwise, somebody, a small artist like myself, an independent artist, would have a really hard time making it.
Let's hear some music. This is from Tommy Guerrero's new album, Lifeboat and Follies. Well, I'm kind of like your mother, but I can feel the beat of that. That's good stuff. Melodies stream through your head. This one just kind of just comes to you, huh?
Yeah, it does, you know. And I'm grateful that I can be a vehicle for whatever is out there, you know, sending me this information or whatever, you know, that I have a muse. I was listening actually to NPR yesterday, and there was a woman talking about that and how I've so it sort of solidified my belief that you can be just, you can perhaps be a conduit for everything out there in the ether. That's just, you just have to be receptive and let it come through.
There's a lot of, I mean, what we're hearing now does have a kind of fusion sound to it. I mean, in terms of Latin beats and rock and roll.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Almost psychedelic, too, in some ways.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I love all types of music. It ranges from Public Enemy to Patsy Cline to, you know, Jobim to Johnny Cash. I mean, and everything.
You got a shirt on like Johnny Cash today. Wearing a black cowboy shirt, as you mentioned. Yeah.
I think it all just ends up coming out in the music, not consciously.
You have your own studio in your house now?
Yeah, I do. I have my own studio. And what I end up doing is I end up mixing the records with my friend Monty just up the block from here. And what we end up doing is really, really creating these textures. I want the music to almost be tangible in that sense. And so we do a lot of what we call reamping, sending things through megaphones and through speakers and putting microphones way up in the rafters and just getting an ambient aspect of the music and tucking it under the whole track. And we really do a lot of real fun things. It's really cool. And it just gives everything some instruments you don't even quite – you're not quite sure what that instrument is because we've manipulated it so much.
Well, it's also a new age of technology, and that's been part of the great fun that you're having, isn't it?
Completely. And, you know, the digital, you know, the digital forum is it's a blessing and a curse in the sense that you can just throw in everything into the pot and later omit or detract anything, and then you can arrange too, which is great. So you don't have to be so you don't have to write everything out prior to recording.
So it's mostly music now? I mean, you're skateboarding. You still skateboard from time to time. An interview you did on NPR, you said it's kind of gnarly now is the word you used.
Skating is super gnarly. But no, I have a J-O-B. I work at Deluxe, and I've been running art directing Crooked Skateboards for the last, I don't know, how many years.
You're doing some graphic design, too?
Yeah. I actually do all the layout and design and work with one of the artist, Mark Gonzalez, who's a pro skateboarder too and an artist, a visual artist. So I end up manipulating his work and laying out skateboards. And
so it's skateboard icon, musician, composer, and entrepreneur.
Yeah, I mean, I've been extremely fortunate. You know, I just have a shoe on Vans. We did a collaboration, and I had a line in Japan with Levi's, and there's some other things brewing. So I'm just extremely grateful.
You're kind of big in Japan. I mean, it's funny how
me and Tom Waits
and Boss Skaggs too.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And well, I'm trying to make it to Germany so me and Hasselhoff can hang out. That'd be great.
I read he's sober and has a new girlfriend, so it may be better to hang out with him these days. You know? We're talking to Tommy Guerrero, who is part of our First Person series, and I invite those of you who are listening to join us. In fact, feel free to do that now. I'd particularly like to hear from some of you who may have some reflections or memories about the skateboard era, the golden era, as it's called, the 80s and 90s, maybe even part of it, or the punk music that Tommy Guerrero also began his career with in a seminal way. And now we're hearing some of that music, and you may want to join him, talk about his music, talk about skateboarding, talk about his entrepreneurship. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls. Again, it's toll-free, 866-733-6786, or email us forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're hearing Archaic Days. That's from Tommy Guerrero's 2005 EP, Year of the Monkey. Tommy Guerrero's music was described by the San Francisco Chronicle as a soul, jazz, psychedelic fusion and feels like a soundtrack for walking the streets of San Francisco. And that's appropriate since he first made a name for himself navigating the city's avenues and alleys and as a pioneering pro skateboarder. We're talking to him about his journey from high school dropout and teen skate icon to entrepreneur and indie music icon. And this is part of our first person series featuring leaders, innovators, and other individuals who make the Bay Area unique. You live in Oakland now, Tommy. Yeah.
I do. Yeah. I do live in Oakland. It's the second time around for living in Oakland.
Talk about, we're going to go to our callers here in a moment, but talk about how your music has evolved, especially in conjunction with your latest release.
I think just it's progressed just as people progress, you know, especially, you know, going from the punk era and being young and being full of, you know, energy and angst and everything else. It comes out musically, of course, because music's about emotion. And so, you know, I got to a point in time where I was listening in the early 90s, listening to a lot of jazz, a lot of the jazz from the late 60s, early 70s. And that started to inform me, especially Grant Green. And I really got into that feel of it, and not being a singer, you know, necessarily or at all, having these melodies in my head and having to figure out a way to play them, because I'm mainly a bass player. So I started really picking up the guitar more and just to get these melodies out. And that's how it all really came to be. It was just kind of out of necessity.
You and your brother compete as far as guitar playing?
No, he's a total rock guitarist, and he's a really good guitar player, whereas I'm not.
Bleeding fingers and all that?
Yeah, you know, Randy Rhoads. He could do all that stuff.
Well, again, you're welcome to join us, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. We do welcome your phone calls for Tommy Guerrero. Toll free, 866-733-6786, or send an email to forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment. And we begin, Christy, with you. Good morning.
Good morning. Tommy, this is Christy from 12th Avenue, Mark's little sister, Mark Jacobson.
Wow.
And I remember you. I remember you very well from early childhood and middle school, and I'm so proud of you, you know, not for being a legend and all that, but I'm actually just really impressed with how you've grown up and followed your unique path of determination. And, you know, just, I was touched by how you talked about skating being kind of a place to learn how to be alone, but it's also a community. It's a fascinating kind of place that you've, a niche that you've kind of touched on, and I hope you talk a little bit more about that later.
Well, let's talk about it now, as long as you brought it up, Christy. Yeah. Yeah, what is that?
Well, you know, the punk scene and misfits, you can be kind of lonely, but if you stay in community, I think it's a healthier expression.
Yeah, I think, yeah, nice to hear from you after, a very, very long time.
Yeah, like 40 years or 30-something years.
Yeah. You know, there's still a part of me that I never feel like I fit in anywhere. And that's okay. I've come to grips with that, obviously.
But there was a skateboard community. There was a punk community.
Completely, yeah. But at that time, it was very small. You know, it was me and my brother, and then a few other friends who skated. And then from there, it grew. And we're talking about, you know, 78. When 76, 78, 79, and this era when it started to grow, but you had the opportunity to be alone, because skateboarding, it's not a team thing, and that's a thing. People want to call it a sport. I've never seen it as a sport. And you don't need a bunch of other players around you. You don't need a team. You don't need anything other than you and your skateboard, and you can find peace within that and within yourself. You don't have to be accepted by anyone or anything to get along in life and to exist. And a friend of mine, Jason Little from Granddaddy, he has a song called Skateboarding Saved Me Twice. And he really means it. And I totally understand where he's coming from.
Saved in the sense of redemption, and saved you from the streets in the worst sense of the streets.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
What were you thinking about when you were out there alone skateboarding? Were you thinking about nothing?
Nothing, right? And that's the point of skating. And to this day, why I still enjoy it is that it's, you know, you can liken it to some sort of that Zen experience in the sense
being
of
in the
being
zone
without being conscious, you know. And that's the point, to escape the daily, just the daily madness. Stop the gears from churning so much, because, you know, I think far too much. You know, I'm up half the night thinking. And it really helps. It's really extremely therapeutic, just like music. It's the same
thing. So they both work in that way.
Very much so.
In a cathartic way. Christy, thank you. Good to hear from you this morning. Of course, I think in an NPR interview once you said they were talking about you turning 40, and you said, and the interviewer said, well, you know, today's 40 is yesterday's 30, and you said, not my joints. That's not what my joints are telling me.
Yeah, definitely not.
So it's more, it'd be more daunting, maybe even impossible to you to perform the kind of stuff you
used to do? Yeah, it would be. I mean, unless I had kept it up completely, even then, you know, I mean, my knees on a daily for no real reason other than just being damaged, just getting out of bed. You know, my knee will give out. And it's a reminder, like, oh, yeah.
Did that have to do with skateboarding?
Yeah, oh, completely. Yeah, completely. I hurt my knee pretty bad a long time ago, and I still
From a fall or from a...
Yeah, from slamming, basically, and I still have pins and a plate in my ankle and so forth, and so, yeah.
Well, let me go to more calls, and we'll go to David. Morning.
Hello. Hi, this is David from Hemi. I don't know, I just met you a couple times, Tommy, but I just want to say, hey, you rad. How you doing?
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Hey, I just want to say you've done a lot of good services for all of us other people who were skating on clay wheels when we're delinquents and outlaws and losers and still are, but you brought it out to respectability, and I just wanted to say that thank you for the inspiration with the music and the skating, and keep it up. You're a very talented and articulate young man.
Thank you. In this age
of biagrammatical conformity, you shine.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for that call. Good to hear from you. And now we hear from Chris next. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Michael.
Yeah, go ahead.
And Tommy, I haven't skateboarded, but I do appreciate it and recognize it as an extremely athletic skill. But something I think is that hasn't been mentioned before, or not so much on your show, is the millions of dollars of property damage and personal to public property and personal property. The little city I grew up in San Mateo, California, here from where I'm calling, this I consider it nearly a disease down here. It's skateboards blasting up and down the sidewalks, and then all the visible damage to stonework and plazas, the same in San Francisco. If you walk through San Francisco, you see all of the devices that have been installed to keep skateboarders from doing damage to the beautiful stonework and other sort of ornamental items in the city. But it's probably, maybe even though skateboard parks have been provided, I think the real challenge and the real excitement for a hardcore skateboarder is in the city.
You are the voice of skateboard criticism, and there's certainly been a lot of that through the years. We've done radio programs and stuff.
Sure.
I must admit, you're right, I am.
Well, hear what Tommy Guerrero has to say about that. Some thoughts from you on it? Reflections from you?
Yeah. There's definitely a couple. One is, first of all, he's right. You know, of course, there's damage.
Been a lot of damage, yeah.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Well, one is, just like anything, Give people a place to go, right? How many basketball courts, baseball diamonds, tennis courts to go unused? How many do you see in every city? You know how many skate parks are in each city? Maybe one. San Francisco didn't get a proper skate park until a few years ago. I don't even get a skate because, you know, I'm past my prime and I had nowhere to go. And so you don't have any after-school programs anymore. You don't have anything positive for these kids to do. But skateboarding kept me out of trouble, me and my brother, being raised by a single parent in San Francisco. Look at all – you go down – you're talking about going down Market Street and skateboarding and everything. Go to 6 and Market Street and see what's really going on. And then let's really deal with the problem at hand. You know, it's not having places for kids to go and to release themselves and be who they need to be in a positive way.
So that's
the real problem.
Chris, I'm glad you called, though. Thank you. It's good to mix up some controversy here.
Sure.
Here's a listener by the name of Kathy Guerrero who writes, Tommy is right. I also can't clap my hands in time to music. Only thing I can play is the radio. That's from Tommy's mom, Kathy Guerrero. And here's from MC. Tommy, can you talk a bit about how San Francisco skate and music culture has changed during your life here? Also, I'm curious, in what part of town do you currently live and where do you spend much of your time?
That's a lot of stuff. Well, you know, of course, skateboarding's evolved and progressed to where it is now, which is just extremely technical and really it's very – intense and really gnarly. I mean, where they've taken these technical tricks to a level of, you know, throwing themselves down 20 stairs, 10-foot gaps and so forth, it's beyond anything I was capable of doing. Or even, you know, if I grew up skating now, I would never do it. There's no way. I don't have what it takes, you know, to do that. And as far as the music, you know, music just – it has progressed – the same here as anywhere, except for the fact that we live in a you know, San Francisco is a total bubble. We live in our little microcosm of a world, and you have a lot of musicians here in the city, but it, you know, it's not like Los Angeles. You know, our pie is very small, so everybody wants to keep their little slice of the pie to themselves. So there's really not a music community in the city in the sense that where people get together. I tried to do something a long time ago. We had a club and we would bring in a bunch of instruments and just invite people come and jam, and we would try to exchange ideas and thoughts and try to create a music community, but it didn't take off because the woman who ran the club decided that it wasn't viable and or profitable, and so therefore she pulled the plug on us.
There's maybe some myth about that even before your time, you know, about Jefferson Star Airplane became Jefferson Starship and the Grateful Dead and all that. I mean, there was clearly a sense of a kind of San Francisco identity with music, but as far as a coherent community, I don't think it really was.
Yeah.
I mean, Joel Selvin and others like that might take issue with me, but...
Sure. I just think...
It's a diverse group of musicians.
Extremely diverse. And here, you know, like I said, it's just, it's everyone's sort of trying to keep their little piece of the pie to themselves, which I understand.
Let me go to some more emails here. This is James who writes, could you ask Mr. Guerrero to talk about his recent concert appearance to generate aid for the earthquake relief in Japan? I was not able to attend but wanted to know more about...
It's actually Umami Mart, which is a site. They contacted me about this benefit they wanted to do. It was April 5th, and it was benefiting Second Harvest in Japan. And, of course, you know, I agreed. It was short notice. It was on a Tuesday, and I was a little reluctant in the sense of getting people to really come out on a Tuesday night and it being $45 to get in. But there was a lot of great vendors. Once you got in, everything was free, food, alcohol, and so forth. And they raised over $10,000 for this event on a Tuesday night. And it was great, you know, just to be part of it. And you know, I say Japan's my second home because I usually go to anywhere from 2 to 3 times a year. And I have a lot of great friends there, and the label I deal with are like family. And so I'm making strides and trying to figure out ways to help out. I'm working on a compilation actually right now that I should have done by the end of this month with a bunch of different people.
Well, to attest to your global reach as well as ours, here's a caller from Cairo, Egypt. Hani, join us. You're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah. Hello?
Yes, hello. Welcome.
Okay. My name is Hani. I'm from Cairo, Egypt.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to say I'm a big fan of Tommy. Hi there. You there?
Yes.
I just wanted to ask you, what keeps you inspired to compose music? What's your inspiration to compose music?
Thanks for calling in, honey, by the way. I appreciate you listening. That's amazing. I think it's just the necessity to be creative and to also it's really a way to connect with people and just to try to communicate with people in a way that I find that's has more impact than language. And then there's something else that I'm not quite sure why. You know, I think that at some point in time, I may just be a vehicle for something else out there.
You said it comes from your own emotional network, you know, so to speak. I mean, your own inner life.
Definitely. I mean, there are, you know, of course, aspects that I pull from internally. But I think also at any point in time, you know, I may be inspired by anything around me. It could be a color, could be anything.
Honey, how did you learn about Tommy Guerrero's music?
I'm a skateboarder myself. I watch a lot of skateboarding stuff, and it caught me some of his songs, and I really got amazed from the combination of his music. It's really amazing.
Well, we thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you this morning. Here's an important question from an anonymous listener. It says, Tommy, could you please comment on helmets and other protective gear? My son is a skater, and I worry about his safety.
Yeah, that's a hard one. first of all,
is your son Diego a skater? By the way,
he's not.
Well, what do you tell a worried mother? You had one.
It depends. First of all, it depends on the level. You know, how long has a person been skating? Are they just starting out? Have they been skating for several years? Where are they skating? What are they doing? Of course. At a young age, you know, my son, I make him wear a helmet. You know, he wears a helmet on his bike or on his scooter, whatever the case may be. And when he does skate, I put a helmet on, of course. You know, I mean, I'm a worrywart. So I totally am fine with kids wearing equipment. But the problem is peer pressure, you know. There are other friends who don't wear the skate, you know, wear the gear. They'll make fun of you. You know, you show up at a spot with a helmet and none of your friends have helmets on, you're going to hear it. So it's a hard call. I mean, it really is trying to figure out what your child is able to do and not do, and making sure they're aware of that to some degree. But, you know, kids are going to throw themselves downstairs anyway, regardless.
Yeah, the tough thing is you can insist that your child wear a helmet, and that could make your child rebel and not wear a helmet.
Of course, but then what they always do, too, is they end up taking everything off and stashing it somewhere.
it's a tough one. You're right.
It's difficult.
Listener writes, having known Tommy for years, despite his being a skateboard icon, despite his many musical accomplishments, he's also really supportive in helping unnoticed San Francisco talent get proper recognition, be it skating, music, and art. These efforts are worth mentioning. Many thanks, and thanks to you for that. Another listener writes, could you please have Tommy discuss the collaboration with the Matton 2? How has working with these two jazz musicians influenced his music?
The Matson 2, they're these young kids, these twin brothers who are just amazing guitarists.
Local guys?
Yeah. Well, they're from down south, but they're on the same label that I work with here in Santa Cruz, Galaxia. And I sit in with them occasionally, and they teach me a thing or three, that's for sure. It keeps me on my toes, to say the least.
We've got a listener who wants to know about the forthcoming Bones Brigade documentary, how it's coming along and what we can expect from it and when it might premiere. And guess what? In addition to that, I think we've got the filmmaker himself. It's Steve, who is a member of Bones Brigade. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how's it going, Michael?
Okay, thanks for joining us. Let me just get an answer to that first question, though, about the documentary, and then we'll hear get your two cents, Steve.
I'm not sure. We did the first rounds of interviews about a month ago, and Stacy's working, you know, on it as we speak. And there's going to be a second round of interviews, so I'm not quite sure. I don't think it's going to come out this year. But I would think that it would be spring or summer of next year.
Well, here's Tom, who says, Bones Brigade reunion, yapple dapple. Give us the scoop on why you went on your own way. Well, let's first hear from Steve. Steve, you were in it, Bones Brigade?
Stevie Caballero.
Yeah, I've known Tommy since 1979.
Yeah.
Or earlier.
What's up, Steve?
Hey, Tommy, just wanted to give you some support and say congratulations on your music career and everything you've done. I love you, brother, and I just wanted to give you a what's up. My brother said my brother Rick said you were on the radio, so I wanted to listen in.
Awesome. Thanks for calling, Steve.
And what's yapple dapple?
You're welcome, man.
Well, the person who just called, Steve Caballero, is one of probably the greatest skateboarders ever lived, greatest vert skater ever lived, probably won more contests than anyone on this planet.
Vert skateboarder?
Vert skateboarder, like pools and ramps and so forth.
Vertical.
And street skater. And we used to skate together down in the skate parks in South Bay. He's from San Jose. And he is the Bones Brigade, really.
So yapple-dapple means
yapple-dapple is just something silly that I had said in a skateboard video called The Search for Animal Chin that a lot of people have seen out there. And all of that stuff stems from cartoons. You know, I was a young kid and I was highly influenced by cartoons.
There was a caller who wanted to ask you about the initial skepticism, I think was the way he or she put it, that greeted your music from the skateboarding community.
I think what it is people want to – that people want to think that you are one-dimensional in the sense that, oh, you're a skateboarder and that's all you can be. You know, when someone's a visual artist and then they go over to being a musician or vice versa or whatever the case may be, that you're – this is what they want you to be because they want to be able to kind of pigeonhole you in that sense. Oh, he's just a skateboarder.
It's and a skepticism and toward multi-talented, too.
Of course. Yeah. But what people fail to realize, anyone who's creative, it doesn't matter what the medium is. They're just creative by nature. And wherever they tend to go and whatever they tend to do, it's gonna be creative. And I don't know. It's just – you can express yourself in so many different ways that I would hate to think that you would limit yourself to one medium.
Let me thank the caller. And here's another listener who says, much respect to Tommy. I remember that first Bones Brigade scene. We were raised in an era of closed skate parks, so the street was instrumental. Major impact on me as a young skater, especially being Chicano Mexicano. Adam writes, I have a question for Tommy. Tommy, I'm a big fan of the old skate punk bands like The Faction, Riot 303, and Minus One, and I love hearing a connection between skating and music. I have the opposite. So how do you think skateboarding has influenced your music and vice versa? I think we've been talking about that.
Yeah, no, I think what it comes down to is during that era when punk kind of came to the West Coast and we were skating, it's just the DIY ethic in that sense of do it yourself. It's the same thing with skateboarding. It's the same thing with music. You know, it's go at it alone. You don't need anyone else to tell you what to do or to do what you want to do. And that's you know, it's remained with me my entire life. And actually now I'm it's extremely I rely on it.
It's who you are. Yeah.
Very much so.
Take another call of somebody who skated with you in the East Bay. Welcome. You're on the air. Good morning.
Tommy, this is Jay West from the East Bay. How's it going?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good. I was just stoked to hear you on the radio and I wanted to say what a great influence you've been on the Bay Area skateboarding community.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Have a great day and just talk to you soon. See you around.
Thank you. You skateboarders use the man a lot, just like jazz musicians, don't you?
Yeah, we do.
There's a whole sense of again, getting back to your music, if you're wanting that music to last, I mean, you've said this on a few occasions in interviews I've read and everything. You hope it'll last. The examples you've used of people like Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder, again, you know, popular musicians and figures in pop music. Do you ever think about that when you're composing, that this is something I hope will endure, or does that come into
It doesn't. I'm not conscious of it in that sense. I think just the desire to create timeless music is everything, really, you know, because you don't want to be seen as, you know, an artist during a specific era, you know. I don't believe that musicians should be sort of relegated to an era. I don't think that they should be remembered for an era. I think that music should be timeless and it should affect you the same way it did when you first heard it or 50 years from now and as well as anyone else who hears it. And especially being a, you know, instrumental musician, I think that I have a better chance.
Well, it seems like one of the things that affected you the most, at least in the beginning, was the Ramones, 1977. That was a seminal moment.
Completely. We cut school. We asked our mom, me and my brother, hey, can we go see this band that's playing out right in front of City Hall? What are you crazy? My mom worked right there too. And she's, you know, go to school. You kids are crazy. You know, and of course we did not. And she didn't know till much later in life. And so we went and seen the Ramones. And of course, you know, what we had seen just completely blew us away. From the garb that people were wearing to the music of the Ramones and everything. It changed my life.
Bring in another caller from Marin. John, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, Tommy?
How's it going? I'm good, man.
Good, man. I just wanted to say, you know, I'm 38 years old, grew up watching the Bones Brigade videos, watched Animal Chin with my 9-year-old probably 6 months ago, and you were a huge influence, your style. You know, I just remember watching you, you know, ride around the streets of San Francisco and the old Bones Brigade videos, and it was just, it was great. And I like what you're doing with the, you know, Relief for Japan. And a musician myself, played drums here locally in a quasi-punk band, the Connies, and would like to see about donating a song to your relief efforts for Japan.
Cool, man. Hit me on my website, and
I'll shoot you an email.
Yeah, that'd be great. And we'll see what we can
awesome.
Do.
Awesome. Hey.
I appreciate it.
Good to talk to you.
Right
big
on.
Fan.
Take care.
Thanks for the call. Talk about, you were really a pioneer of street skating. Talk about when that took off and maybe why it took off as opposed to just the skate parks and the like.
I think it just, what happened, you know, all the skate parks closed down in the South Bay. And it really, skateboarding really hit a lull. And Thrasher magazine came along in that era when skateboarding was at a very low point, you know, coming out of the 70s when you had people like Tony Alva and Stacy Peralta and, you know, all these cats who were pretty big in the 70s. Thrasher magazine came around.
Didn't they do some of the backing of Real Skateboard that?
Thrasher magazine.
Financially,
completely. It's they own several of the businesses, but it started with Thrasher magazine, and when all the parks closed, you know, everybody started either building ramps in their backyards if you had space, but living in San Francisco, as we all know, no one really has the space to make the ramps. So we just hit the streets, and they started covering it and bringing it to people, going, hey, this is okay, man. This is cool. This is what we're doing now.
Tommy, good to meet you. Good to have you on with us. Appreciate you and all you've done.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's a great honor to be here.
We're also hearing 40 Summers.
Yes.
By Tommy Guerrero as we go out. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.